The documentary film, The Cruise, is considered a cult classic amongst film buffs. It's the affectionate portrait of Timothy Speed Levitch, an eccentric double-decker bus tour guide.
If architecture is the history of all phallic emotion, the Empire State Building is utter catharsis, and we are sitting in its silhouette.
In a now eerie scene from that film, he stands between the towers of the World Trade Center, spins until he's dizzy, and then looks up. He says he likes to see the towers falling. Now get this. After all these years, Speed lives here in Kansas City. And now he's coming into KCUR Studios to tell us all about his new Hulu travel series titled Up to Speed. I'm Jabalani LaFall, the one and only Speed Levitch, Speeds Through, on Central Standard after this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City. The academic discipline of psychogeography is defined as the study of precise laws and specific effects of the geographical environment, consciously organized or not, on the emotions and behavior of individuals. You're about to meet an actor and historical tour guide who puts the psycho into geography, and people love it. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Actor, historical guide, and current KC resident Timothy Speed Levitch is here. And he once played the role of a lunatic in an animated film, Walking Life, and now has a new show on Hulu called Up to Speed, which he gives historical tours with an edge. Speed Levitch, welcome to the show.
Great to be here.
Now, tell us about your show, Up to Speed, and how it came about.
Up to Speed is a history show that's funny. Comedy is the priority, even if history is the vehicle. When we were first pitching the show to Hulu, the conversation began with us saying that we wanted to do a show that was a history travel show meeting The Muppet Show. And it's got that tone of The Muppet Show.
It sure does. I think you've achieved that objective there. Now, you're pitching it to Hulu. How is it different when you're pitching it to Hulu versus one of the big 4,000 or 5,000 channels?
It was an ebullient conversation from the beginning. I think because it's Hulu's agenda to do stuff that's original right now that the other channels can't do, wouldn't do, and they're therefore Up to Speed came to fruition.
I think they were probably sold on the word ebullient. It's not really used with the big four networks. You have a reputation, speaking of which, for talking to inanimate historical objects. Why?
Well, there's so much to be learned from these seemingly dense pieces of matter. A lot of the monuments featured on the show are old friends of mine. I've been chatting with them for years.
And what have they said? And did you strike up the conversation, or did they strike up the conversation?
Well, you know, when you work in tourism for a while, you realize that with a lot of things in our world, it's very high school. The very popular and famous landmarks are really quite vapid. That's why they're popular. It's the dweebs in the corner of the cafeteria. The wallflowers standing awkwardly at the party. The monumentally ignored monuments of our world that actually have the most interesting things to say.
So in other words, the Statue of Liberty gives you no love, but the Flatiron Building, you guys get along.
Yeah, well, we also on the show do hang out with famous landmarks. We just like to talk about them in an original way. The Statue of Liberty's on the show is a good example. I mean, she's certainly a famous landmark, but we visit with her inner psyche.
And what does her inner psyche say?
Well, for instance, the original sculptor, Bartholdi, he based the face of the statue on his mother and the body on his girlfriend. Actually, I might be a little dyslexic on that. It's a Freudian thing, I think. I get it slipped up myself. I think the body...
Oedipus, definitely.
Yeah, right? Like, the body's based on the mother, the face on the girlfriend. I get it confused. But basically, he used his mother and his girlfriend in a semblance to create the Lady Liberty that we know. And so clearly the monument is explaining to us that true liberation is when we find harmony with all the women in our lives.
Hence the words, give me your tired and your poor.
Right on.
Now, reaction to your approach and your show has ranged from people calling it a revolutionary approach to historic tour guides to mind-numbingly boring. How do you strike that balance?
Yeah, well, is it an Abraham Lincoln who said you can't please all the people all the time? I think when you do bring originality into the world, it's very bipolaring. You get extreme reactions on both ends.
Was that Abe Lincoln and also Bob Marley?
Yeah, although Bob Marley's sample was much more famous, I think.
Certainly was. Is this a way, Speed, to make history fun?
Yeah. And I think that inflicting historicism with a new tone, you know, somebody's got to do it. And maybe the true alchemy of our age, or one of them, is turning tragedies into comedies. Because maybe if we can have more fun, laugh a little more at our past tense, we'll get a little better at laughing at our present tense, not taking it so seriously all the time.
And we'll get into tragedy and the comedy in a few moments here. But let's back up a little bit. How did you get the name Speed? Tell us the story behind that.
Oh, yeah. It was in high school. You got to love the nicknames that stick to you. I mean, at this point, I guess I was nicknamed Speed when I was about 16. So for more than most of my, more than half of my longevity, people have been calling me Speed. I was named by a friend of mine in high school, Laughing Boy. All of us went to high school in the Bronx. And if we just went two blocks down the hill from our campus, we're on 242nd and Broadway. There was video games and pizza, a lot of good pizza, and a pool hall. We used to go and shoot pool every day in the middle of the day. And all of us who shot pool at that pool hall had nicknames. And many of us still walk around with the same nicknames that Laughing Boy gave us. I guess he was a seer, really good at nicknaming.
Very coming of age along the Hudson River type motif.
Totally.
Of your name.
Yeah.
you can almost hear the voiceover.
Yeah.
Of that particular story.
With the one train running above us.
It was me, Speedy, and Laughing Boy. You know, just a couple of guys from the neighborhood. That
yeah.
type of thing.
There was Bazooka Germ Pollitt, Johnny Ace Arbo, Lefty Lebowitz, who of course was a righty.
Really?
Yeah.
That's excellent.
Our friend Alex Wu was a really timid guy, shy. So Laughing Boy nicknamed him Mad Dog Wu.
Mad Dog Wu. Mad Dog Wu. Gotta
love
it.
Yeah, we all had nicknames.
Gotta love it. So you became a tour guide. Why?
Well, I was graduating from college, and I'd been studying theater, you know, and performing and writing, and I was in my own world. And I'm sure a lot of people can identify that when I was graduating from college, somebody told me I had to get a job, and I didn't know what they were talking about. I was really confused. And I was like, what can my dysfunctional self actually contribute to society? I had no thought. But then I sat down with myself and I tried to think about the things that I like to do. I love walking the streets. I like the city. I was interested in history. And I love performing. And so tour guiding just seemed like the perfect nexus of all those characteristics.
Did you get any guidance from historical landmarks on your epiphany about being a tour guide?
That's an excellent question. In fact, I did. And there were several landmarks in those days when I was walking the streets that issued forth the proclamation to me and my slight dab of schizophrenia that the city is alive and it's a very human situation. It was built by humans. It's lived in by humans. All these cities are great stage sets for human drama. The city's alive, and it's a profound opportunity to understand ourselves and our lives.
Tell us about your 1998 film, Cruise, which followed you around as a tour guide in New York City and kind of introduced you to the world stage, or at least the world stage of people who are into really avant-garde specialty documentaries.
Yeah, exactly. And at the time the Cruise came out, it was a full-length black-and-white feature documentary in a time period that was back then when documentaries weren't nearly as popular as they are now. It was a project that took 4 years. It started in 1994, and it featured different walking tours I was doing at the time of the city, and most of all, my job on the double-decker bus, which was the double-decker loop. I'd also like to call it the loop-de-loop. We did 4 or 5 circles a day around Manhattan. I did that job for 6 years.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, and we're streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Our guest is the actor, historical tour guide, and current KC resident, Timothy Speed Levitch. He has his own show on Hulu called Up to Speed, in which he gives historical tours. Think of it as This American Life, wait for it, on speed.
Woo!
Right? Okay.
I love that description.
So in order to set a preamble for your current work, let's hear a clip from the film Cruise. And in this clip, you're explaining thoughts on the city's grid system. But we want you out there in radio land to listen carefully. There's way more to it than that. You're way more to it than just you describing the grid system. And I think it'll help answer our question of why you're called Speed. Let's check this out.
The image makes me think of this conversation with this woman the other day. She was a fastidious Judaic type woman in very sexual slacks. And we were talking about the grid plan. And I made the comment about how, you know, the grid plan emanates from our weaknesses, this layout of avenues and streets in New York City, this system of 90-degree angles. To me, the grid plan is Puritan, it's homogenizing in a city where there is no homogenization available. There is only total existence, total cacophony, a total flowing of human ethnicities and tribes and beings and gradations of awareness and consciousness and cruising. And this woman turns to me and she goes, "Oh, I never even thought of that." She goes, "I can't imagine it. Everyone likes the grid plan." And of course the question is like, who is everyone? I mean, it's just what I had said. And I mean, whoever that is under the white comforter, cuddled up with 34th Street and Broadway, existing on the concrete of this city, hungry and disheveled, struggling to crawl their way onto this island with all of their machinated rages and hellishness and self-orchestrated purgatories. I mean, what does that person think about the grid plan? Probably much more on my plane of thinking, my gradation of being, which is let's just blow up the grid plan and rewrite the streets to be much more a self-portraiture of our personal struggles, rather than some real estate broker's wet dream from 1807. We're forced to walk in these right angles. I mean, doesn't she find it infuriating? By being so completely allegiant to the grid plan, I think most noteworthy is this idiom, "I can't even imagine changing the grid plan." She's really aligning herself with this civilization. It's like saying, like, "Oh, I can't imagine altering this civilization. I can't imagine altering this meek and lying morality that rules our lives. Can't imagine standing up on a chair in the middle of the room to change perspective. I can't imagine changing my mind on anything. I, in the end, can't imagine having my own identity that contradicts other identities." When she says to me, after my statements, "Everyone likes the grid plan," isn't she automatically excluding myself from everyone? How could you not like the grid plan? So functional. Take a right turn, and a right turn, and a right turn, and then there's a red light, and then a green light, and a yellow light. It's so symmetrical. By saying that everyone likes the grid plan, you're saying I'm going to relive all the mistakes my parents made. I'm going to identify and relive all the sorrows my mother ever lived through. I will propagate and create dysfunctional children in the same dysfunctional way that I was raised. I will spread neurosis throughout the landscape and do my best to recreate myself and the damages of my life for the next generation.
That was from the documentary The Cruise. Just to give you a bit of a preamble on who our guest is today, Timothy Speed Levitch, who has a new show on Hulu called Up to Speed, in which he gives historical tours. That was his musings on the grid plan of New York City, which he compared so eloquently to a woman in sexual slacks. A woman in sexual slacks. Speaking of which, your approach is very literary, poetic almost, like spoken word. What makes you take that approach?
I think it's a love of jazz bebop. I always loved how, you know, if you give Charlie Parker a jazz standard, you're going to get the jazz standard, but you're also going to get a part of him. He dives inside the notes to give you a piece of his soul along with the jazz standard. I guess I always thought of the tour that way. I want to hit the facts. I want to hit the basic plot points of a story, but I also want to play inside of the notes and give you a part of myself along the way.
And of course, improvisation and diving in and out of the notes is a very challenging thing to do, particularly when you have a template before you, as a musician would have instrumentation and notations before him or her. Speaking of which, how do you learn to retain where Mark Twain sat or D.H. Lawrence or Edgar Allan Poe lived or where Arthur Miller contemplated suicide or what John Brown said or what William Crontrell's facial hair looked like. what is that thought process like? How do you retain all those facts? Do you walk around with a portable hard drive attached to your ear or something?
You know how it is. It's the power of curiosity. When you're interested in something, when you find it interesting, it just goes right on in there, right between the eyes. And the tour really is just an assemblage of details that I found interesting. And that's why I'm retaining them, just because I found it fascinating.
But it's not your classical tour. It's not, there's Times Square, there's Central Park, or in the case of Kansas City, ooh, look, there's a fountain. It's actually the sort of live, ongoing, living document of the city.
Yeah. Yeah, I grew up with that. Some great tour guide teachers, amazing, amazing people, encyclopedias of knowledge, walking encyclopedias, basically. These people, these historians that I learned from were incredible. But when you went out on their tour, as much as they had all the information, I kept saying to myself, where is the rock and roll? We need a little rock and roll here. So I tried to merge the amazing work that they were doing, their incredible historicism, with the Clash, with the punk music that I'd grown up with.
And there's a bit of soothsaying, if you will, in some of your musings in this documentary, The Cruise. There's a scene, a pivotal scene, where you're spinning around in front of the World Trade Center. This is in the 90s when it was filmed and when it appeared and was released. Tell us about that experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, back in the college days, we often would walk down to the World Trade Centers. We were at NYU in Greenwich Village. So, of course, you got to profound view of the towers from Greenwich Village. You're far away, but not that far away. And you walk downtown, and we used to just spin between the towers. I don't know, you were down there too. I mean, physically, when you were in between the towers, that was just one of the first things that would occur to me and to my friends. I mean, spinning between those towers was so much fun, especially if you look down first and then look up once you're dizzy. It was like a private amusement park ride unto yourself.
Now, when you say spinning between the towers, I just want to be clear for our Theater of the Mind participants
yes,
out there.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Oh, I'm literally, you know, a la 4-year-old in the sandbox, spinning myself around to make myself dizzy.
So like Julie Andrews and Sound of Music type spinning.
Oh, yeah. Actually, that's a more precise description of the act.
Why do I know that? Why do I know that? So what happens as a result of this spinning? Tell us about what you actually said when you were done spinning.
Oh, yeah, because once you were done spinning, and then you can lie down and look up at the towers, and it looked like they were falling in on you because you were so dizzy.
Wow. Wow. So when that event happened a few years later, that historical event that anybody within the sound of my voice right now can remember where they were when that happened, what was your reaction?
It was absolutely bizarre. I mean, bordering on surreal. Of course, after that, the pain of it sets in. But the first moment of seeing that image is completely bizarre, especially for someone like me who always thought of the towers as a fun place. I mean, I went down there to spin.
And me and my dad used to go to Lower Manhattan and look out at the Statue of Liberty in Battery Park and then turn around and look at the towers. And sort of you have your symbol of freedom out here and then you have your symbol of success in back of you. And then looking up, you could see the towers were almost sort of spinning without you having to spin.
Yeah.
And now as a landmark, it's not there. You talked about the grid earlier. And by accepting the grid, you're accepting the mistakes and the achievements of generations past. But talk about, with the World Trade Center gone and sort of changing demographics and different development regimes in our American cities, how does that affect the grid?
Yeah, you know, I think Ground Zero is a great example of the way things could be and the way things are. I mean, it was a really clear x-ray. Because after the tragedy happened, and you being in New York, you probably remember this. I mean, it was the first time in probably 400 years that the city of New York invited the population to be in on the real estate speculation, to discuss what should happen with those 16 acres now that the buildings were gone and there was a big empty hole there. And remember, there was a really passionate debate. It seems like every citizen of the city had their own opinion, his or her own opinion about what should be done with those 16 acres.
And of course, Robert Moses rolls over as this is happening.
Right, exactly. And in the long run, it turned into business as usual. Eventually, remember they had a competition and people went to go visit the competition and give in their opinions about what were the best plans. Eventually, real estate speculation returned to basic business, and a few sullen elderly men in a fluorescently lit room decided what the city would look like for everyone else.
You had your own proposal at the time.
That's right.
What was it?
Me and the director, Richard Linklater, did a short film at the time called Live from Shiva's Dance Floor.
Hold on. Live from Shiva's Dance Floor. Explain who Shiva is, the Hindu goddess of destruction.
Creation and destruction.
Right.
So Shiva's Dance Floor, you're on the dance floor of creation and destruction. And that was the joke. Like, we're live from Shiva's Dance Floor.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. How soon was that after the tragedy?
Oh, about 10 months.
About 10 months.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you take that approach?
Well, I had been doing my Wall Street walking tour for years down there. For between 98 and 2004, really, for those 6 years, I was doing street theater in Manhattan, just meeting people on corners, $20 a head, and I'd take them out on a 90-minute walking tour of different neighborhoods. And Wall Street was one of my most popular ones. And so I always had shticks about the World Trade Center that was a major landmark on the Wall Street tour. And so you can imagine it was, you know, it's troublesome. One of my major landmarks on my tour route was gone. So I decided, since I didn't have the towers anymore, I would just start touring the hole that was left behind. And the tour that I gave of the actual Ground Zero hole, that's what became Live from Shiva's Dance Floor.
So explain your collaboration with Richard Linklater, the famed director, well-known director. Talk about how that materialized. He's working with you on this current project, Up to Speed.
Yeah. I met Richard Linklater in 1998 when that film, The Cruise, that you'd mentioned was traveling around the country. And you find your playmates, you know? I mean, we just hit it off right away. Groovers know groovers, I guess, another way. And we were just, like, grooving out, and we started collaborating almost immediately. We did a scene for his great film, Waking Life, which is the animated film that's about lucid dreaming. And then we did Live from Shiva's Dance Floor. And even when you watch Live from Shiva's Dance Floor, I think you can see it as almost a pre-pilot for the show we're doing right now, 10 years later. There was already a lot of the ingredients of Up to Speed, currently on Hulu, in that film 10 years ago.
Currently on Hulu. Now, in Live from Shiva's Dance Floor, you propose that the World Trade Center site should be turned into a park of free-roaming American bison, popularly known as the buffalo. You said 16 acres of blazing grass, a place for togetherness, healing out loud, and spontaneous culture. And in the middle of the park, the memorial should not be an inanimate slab of stone, but rather should have a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Thus the buffalo. An actual heartbeat?
Yeah, well, if that landscape had always been ruled by the brain, let's just send it over to another organ, the heart. The Buffalo Joy Park, I still think, was a great idea.
Buffalo Joy Park.
That was the official title. And, you know, I still have friends in New York, as the Freedom Tower is now being constructed. They say to me that all the time they look up and see the Freedom Tower, and they say, you know, damn, like, that could have been the Buffalo Joy Park.
Indeed. What do you learn about people, Speed, as a tour guide? What do you learn about people?
Well, for a tour guide, the great landmarks are the tourists. And pretty quickly into any kind of tour guide career, I think every tour guide has that realization that the living landmarks are the great landmarks. The greatest landmarks have heartbeats. And as a tour guide, you just meet amazing people from all over the world, especially like when I was working in New York, you can imagine. I was dealing with people from every habitable continent of the world on a daily basis. It was like I had my own little United Nations going there.
You said the participants of each of your tours, your goal when the participants take part in your tours, is for your participants to feel like this is the first day of their lives. Expound on that, if you will.
Well, it's an ambitious goal, but
very.
If you're going to have a goal, you might as well have a good one.
So they'll be slapped by a doctor on your tour, in other words.
You know, yeah, a little electroshock therapy.
Cynthia in Prairie Village wants to know, what attracted you to live or move to Kansas City? And we'll be talking about your experiences with Kansas City in the second part of this program coming up, but give us a little preface to that.
Yeah, I partially grew up in Kansas City. Both my parents are Kansas Cityans. And starting at the age of 9, I started coming to Kansas City for my summers and just hanging out with my grandparents who all lived here. And this was just a great time in my life. I had such good times in Kansas City. And I think that I still have that nostalgic outlook. When I'm driving around Kansas City, I realize I'm still nine. I'm still looking at it like I did as I did when I was nine. And by the time I became 16, Kansas City turned into my own private Las Vegas. I used to show up in New York. I still wasn't driving. My grandpa would hand me a wad of cash and give me the car. And that was the first time I was alone, semi-adult, prowling the public surface of a city. Kansas City is the first place I ever went to a tapas bar. So it's always got a special place in my heart.
That's very ironic. Coming from New York City, that's very ironic.
Yeah.
Now, you're also a New Yorker, part-time Kansas City, and you have sort of DNA and sort of genes in both areas, genetic materials in both areas. Pause. But why do you think people outside this metro area, particularly on the coast, describe this area simply as Kansas, even though it's the biggest city in the region and it's in Missouri? What's the disconnect on basic geographical education? What's that about?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think perhaps it comes back to having an aloof attitude towards your environment, which we all tend to do. I know the hardest tour to do is of your own backyard. Maybe that's the thesis or the hope behind Up to Speed, this new show we're doing, is that it could promote in people their own ability that they have to converse with their environment.
What would you tell a New Yorker about Kansas City, and what would you tell Kansas Cityan about a New Yorker?
I always start with where I was at when I was five. I remember when I was five, I was going back and forth between New York and Kansas City so much that I assumed Kansas City was just another borough of New York, like some weird borough on the other side of Brooklyn. And I've always thought of it as one giant city. And the conversation between a place like New York and Kansas City is very much alive. It's a very exciting conversation.
Our guest is actor, historical tour guide, and current KC resident, Timothy Speed Levitch, who has a new show on Hulu called Up to Speed, in which he gives historical tours. Think of it, as I said earlier, as This American Life on speed. Kansas City, where do you go to connect with the past and help it inform your present? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can chime in with your thoughts at centralstandard@kcur.org. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, our tour guide resumes with our guest take on Kansas City, a city he says he loves because he prefers boundlessness to boundaries. More on that when we return. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Our guest today, as you've heard, has a unique voice. And if you're just joining us, he said he thinks of creativity as the pursuit of the original exuberance that we all came into this world with. The exuberance that we all had until it was taken off to an abandoned dock somewhere and shot in a gangster assassination by the outside world. Yes, we have an interesting guest today, actor and historical tour guide and current KC resident and host of an online show on Hulu called Up to Speed, in which he gives historical tours. It's This American Life on speed, or some kind of hybrid of some sort, a historical hybrid.
Yeah, another description I thought of was it's as if an episode of Sesame Street that's orchestrated by the Beastie Boys.
Wow. I would love to see something like that.
Yeah.
I would love to see something like that. Speaking of Up to Speed, your most recent episode is about Kansas and Missouri, better known as the Kansas City episode, or as they presented it on the show, Kansas.
Yeah.
You looked in the particular role of borders in our life. That's what you looked at. That was the overriding theme. What made you take that tact on borders?
I think it's really because these last few years I've been living right on state line. And every time I go to the grocery store, I'm crossing over the border between Kansas and Missouri. And I was like, borders are such a part of our lives, but we don't often talk about them because they're right under our feet. It's like discussing the concrete of the sidewalk. Like, it doesn't come up in conversation because it's always there.
And it's interesting how you see borders on a map. You see borders in pictorial representations of where we live, but there is no actual line, maybe a sign.
Right,
marking it,
right.
No actual line.
You know, and State Line is a special guest star in this episode. And we interview the Bowie knife that was in the show. We interview historical objects, inanimate objects. And one of the major characters in the Kansas episode is an old knife that was carried by a Confederate colonel that he dropped at the Battle of Blackjack, about 20 miles outside of Lawrence, Kansas. And John Brown, the famous abolitionist, picked it up. And so when you talk to the Bowie knife, you're talking to a knife that fought for both sides of the war. And who has a better view than borders and how ridiculously we take them so seriously than a knife that fought for both sides of the Civil War?
When you talk to the Bowie knife, did you find it to be particularly sharp?
Yes, it's very sharp. And very, very sharp physically and very sharp with its observations about life.
Certainly. Do you do these voices for the historical objects as well?
We hire actors, voiceover actors.
Gabby and Casey Moe, speaking of voiceover actors, Gabby and Casey Moe writes in at centralstandard@kcur.org to say, I love this guy. His voice and personality remind me of Cartman from South Park. Do you watch South Park? And are you a Cartman fan? And does this influence your documentaries?
Definitely, definitely. South Park should be turned into a time capsule so it can express for all of us our age to the future.
Can you do a can you do a quick Cartman for Gabby?
No, I guess not right off the top of my head. I'd have to work on it, Gabby, but I appreciate the comparison.
Now you skip across the border, literally, in this episode where you feature State Line. Why do you like skipping back and forth across the border?
It's giddy fun to enjoy the border that was so hotly contested not that long ago. You know, in the blip of an eye, human history is a century, is like a blip in the eye. And there, just to be able to skip across a border that used to cost people's lives and that was caused bloodshed. I don't know. There's just something fun about that activity.
We actually do have a clip of that activity from your new show called Up to Speed on Hulu, where you stand at 122nd Street and State Line Road and explain our highly contested border and that legacy thereof. This leads you to a certain monument that we'll discuss in a moment. But right now, let's go to that clip on State Line.
I think you guys are going to be really impressed with our next guest. It gained renown as one of the most controversial borders in American history. In its prime, this border came as close as any border could hope to being a trustworthy line drawn right down the middle between right and wrong. As borders go, it's pretty serene, tries to fit in, appears to be just an average road. But this average road is none other than a road called State Line, the border shared between Missouri and Kansas. This border was born out of the Missouri Compromise of 1820, but it really came into its own 30 plus years later with the coming of the Kansas-Nebraska Act of 1854. The Kansas Territory was open for settlement on May 30th, 1854. Kansas was the one place where the experiment called popular sovereignty came home to roost. Popular sovereignty was a desperate shtick pulled by lawmakers of the North and South as they announced in an ironic unison that they were so miserably failing in an attempt to come up with a compromise of any kind, the only new idea they had was to ask those who would settle in the new territory to vote as to whether Kansas should enter the Union as a slave state or as a free state. On the day that the Kansas Territory opened, New York Senator William Seward took the opportunity to address the Southern senators directly. Come on then, gentlemen of the slave states. We will engage in competition for the virgin soil of Kansas. That would have been Seward's way of saying to his Southern counterparts, bring it on, bitches! Right away, free state people and pro-slavers rushed to the new territory in question to settle and cast their vote. It was around that time that Kansas gained the nickname Bleeding Kansas. The border wars got so bad around here that when it came time for one of the districts along the border to name itself, the only name the citizens of the district could come up with was Burnt. Today, the Central Memorial of the Burnt District is a great example of a bold and brilliant, totally ignored monument. A lone chimney.
That was from Up to Speed, in which Timothy Speed Levitch, who's the host, gives historical tours on unseen monuments, unheralded monuments, and he's talking about an old idea that never gets old, the border war between Missouri and Kansas. Our guest today in studio is Timothy Speed Levitch. Talk about that lone chimney in Burnt, Kansas.
Yeah, it's in Harrisonville, Missouri. And it's a great example of it's a really wonderful monument that's kind of sitting in the midst of a large parking lot near the main courthouse of Harrisonville. And it's a lovely monument. It has the great George Caleb Bingham painting on it that is about Order Number 11, which was this horrific little anecdote that happened in the middle of the border wars when a General Ewing, actually from the Union, dispatched an order to evacuate the entire district because of guerrilla raids that were going on from the bushwhacker side. And so it's just another little horrendous anecdote in the larger horrendous anecdote that was the border wars. And that lone chimney just still sits there remembering what everyone chooses to forget amongst that large parking lot.
There are some other monuments that come up during the show, too, that are obscure but are historically significant. Talk about some of the other ones.
We mentioned the Bowie knife at the top of the Kansas episode. We do other episodes in the show, too. We go to San Francisco and Chicago. In New York, we visit with the luckiest subway grate in the whole city. You'd know the famous image of Marilyn Monroe standing on the subway grate with her dress blowing up in the air. Well, we interview that actual subway grate that was part of that original shot.
And what did it have to say?
Well, it is the luckiest subway grate in the whole city.
Enough said. Kansas City, where do you go to connect with the past and bring it forward to your present and tell yourself a little bit about what your future might be in the city you live in, where you are presently, where you are standing? Our guest is Timothy Speed Levitch, whose new show is on Hulu, and it's called Up to Speed, in which he gives historical tours. It's kind of like This American Life on speed. And I promise I'll come up with another metaphor as the show progresses. We're asking you, where do you go to connect with the past and connect it to your present? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can chime in at centralstandard@kcur.org. Let's go to Chris in Overland Park. Chris, welcome to Central Standard.
Hey, guys. I love the show. Thanks so much. I think you're looking for This American Waking Life.
nice, Chris.
I found out about Speed many years ago, I think when I was in junior high, when I saw Cruise. And I loved it, thought it was absolutely fascinating portrait. And my favorite part of the movie, in fact, when I fell in love with his entire commentary, was when he was talking about the historical inaccuracies of Central Park usage. The patrons of Central Park who were using Central Park improperly by rollerblading or exercising. And I was hoping maybe he could talk a little bit about that. And then I was wondering what his favorite museums and parks are in Kansas City. Central Park and the Met are wonderful, but what is he like in KC?
Let's start with that last question. What do you like in KC?
Oh, yeah. Kansas City is one of the most brilliantly architectural landscaped cities, for a large part due to the influence of Kessler, who was an apprentice of Frederick Law Olmsted. I've often gotten the feeling that if the great 19th century landscape architects like Frederick Law Olmsted were alive today, Kansas City would be one of their favorite American cities because it kind of lives out that dream of a city that's also a park, endlessly, nature and cosmopolitan society coexisting. In terms of museums in Kansas City, of course, we love the National World War I Museum. In fact, my older brother, Mark Levitch, is an art historian, and he's written a whole book about the big mural that's in the National World War I Museum in Kansas City at the Liberty Memorial. It's called the Pantheon de la Guerre. Excuse my French pronunciation. But that book is in the gift shop at Liberty Memorial. It's a whole complicated story about basically the largest painting that was ever painted in the history of the world in Paris during World War I that ended up being fragmented. And the majority of it that's still on Earth is in that World War I museum in downtown Kansas City. Of course, I also love the Negro League Museum, one of the great unique museums of the United States of America. And would say that Kansas City has a lot of unique museums like that that go completely underestimated around the country.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM, KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Our guest is actor, historical tour guide, and current KC resident via New York, Timothy Speed Levitch, who has a new show on Hulu called Up to Speed, in which he gives historical tours. How to describe this show? It's like pulling the guy out of the club who's been on a bender all night and asking him to give you a tour of historical landmarks, and then you loving this tour. That's kind of what it's all about. Speaking of which, you think of cities as living organisms, as you said. What are the living, breathing characteristics of Kansas City, which you called at one point an autobiography?
Yeah, I think that Kansas City speaks to us all in the way that its downtown was once such a penultimate place to be and then fell into decay and has made its own comeback. It's yet another example of how a city is alive, and proof of that is that all things that live, I think we can all attest to this, those of us who are currently alive, life is transition. And things that are alive go through transitions. Downtown Kansas City is a great example of a living thing that's gone through its transitions.
You talk about your connection here and how KC speaks to you. You speak to historically inanimate objects that are historically significant, Bowie knives, cannons, things of that nature. What does Kansas City say to Speed Leavage? The city of Kansas City.
Well, of course, we have a complicated relationship, as I'm sure many can identify with. I mean, it's a complicated place with many flavors. And just like a human relationship, I've gone through many transitions with my own relationship with Kansas City. And not so different than relationships I've had with many of my ex-girlfriends.
That's a good mixed metaphor to use when you're talking about cities and monuments and just metaphors all over the place.
Yeah, and relationships really are a mosh pit of neurons.
And also, as you talk about how a city evolves and what isn't there anymore, what disappears, a new business coming in, a building coming down. You think, of course, recently of Jardine's closing and the sort of shifting demographics of a city as it lives and breathes. It definitely lends itself to a personal experience.
Definitely.
How do you paint that mosaic for people?
Well, I think... For me, what I was most excited about, one of my near future projects, is doing a taste tour of Kansas City. Because I would love the idea of doing a tour of Kansas City. There's all sorts of tours you could do. You could do microscopic appreciations of its cemeteries, and it could go on forever. But a taste tour, I thought, would be particularly emblematic and excellent because the food here is so important, and such famous landmarks are the restaurants. And in tasting those flavors, you are tasting the culture. You're tasting the evolution of the place. A taste tour is a wonderful way to tour the history of the city and nosh all at once. And that's one of my dream projects right now, is to create a taste tour of Kansas City.
We'll be watching for that. We'll definitely be watching for that. Speaking of which, you know a lot of arcane historical details, a lot of obscure historical factoids. Got a large database there. What's KC known for aside from fountains, barbecue, jazz, Negro League baseball, and app design?
That's mostly what it's known for out there. Oh, and also remember, it's flyover territory. It's what the people on the coast call flyover because they just fly over it.
Here's a trivia fact for Central Standard fans that you may not know. As we were canvassing what we would name this show, you know, we come in from out of town, so we come in with our swagger and our presumptuousness and all that. One of the names didn't make it for obvious reasons, was The Flyover.
Yeah.
Wow. Talk about historical significance. A lot of what happens historically is about what didn't happen.
Yes.
We're glad that didn't happen.
Yes.
Talk about some of the things that didn't happen.
Yeah. Well, I am grateful that those people, those abolitionists from Massachusetts way back when, traipsed all that way just to go found Lawrence, Kansas, and that the citadel for the free state movement continued in the fortress-like way it did. It certainly got burned down enough times to earn its current title as the Emerald City of the abolitionist movement.
And you talk about in your episode of Up to Speed on Hulu, when you look at the border wars between Missouri and Kansas, how the Jayhawks actually got their name. And it wasn't because of Danny Manning or Bill Self.
Right.
How did the Jayhawks get their name?
A little bit before the basketball
team. A little bit.
Yeah. The Jayhawk is a proud bird. It's a mythological species.
Of course.
Renowned for, in legend, being uncapturable, cannot be caught. Also very good at stealing. Part hawk, part blue jay. The Jayhawk, although a mythological species, out of all ornithology, I'm sure is the right bird to represent freedom fighters. And the Jayhawk and its entire flock was almost destroyed on multiple occasions during the border wars. And yet, and the Jayhawk itself has gone through a lot of transitions, another living thing. But the Jayhawk of today, whenever I see it on, you see it on windshields, on license plates all over town. What a wonderful icon to remind us of the importance of freedom on a daily basis.
And also, what a cute little thing to dangle in front of a tiger.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of our local listeners will understand what that actually means. No need to go further.
You know, and I do want to say that if we do get a chance to do another season of Up to Speed, this show, there's definitely a good Columbia, Missouri episode that's currently percolating. I've been doing tours of Columbia, Missouri for years through the True Falls Film Festival that happens there once a year. And that's also a fabulous story in a whole nother way.
Why do you love Columbia, Missouri?
It's a place where ruins are innovated. The columns, I think, are one of the great landmarks of America. It's a frontier town, and it seems to me that when you're a frontiersman building a frontier, you need ruins for validation. The columns are like America's nouveau Parthenon. The innovation of ruins somehow made the place feel valid, even though it was just a dusty town at the time.
Now, there's a curious characteristic of your show. The tourists on your show tend to just kind of stand there as you talk. Are they non-speaking extras? Are they actors with SAG cards? Is that process deliberate? Talk about the role of your actual tour people as they stand in front of you.
Yeah, they're extras.
They're extras.
They're people who go to auditions and they read Backpage and they were paid a daily rate. The show is staged, and I like the tour group. They're like a mute Greek chorus.
They're
a presence. They're a character. They just never speak.
That's amazing. So they stand there and get your SAG card.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
It's good on the resume, isn't it? That's a good one for the resume.
It is. Among other things, you've also hosted a local California pizza kitchen. Now, when I say host the California pizza kitchen, I mean you've been the guy that stands there when people come to California Pizza Kitchen. Now, let me ask you this, Speed. Does CPK let you cut loose, or do you have to contain yourself when patrons come into CPK?
Well, of course. It is true. Being a host is a kind of another kind of tour guide. You're giving them a tour to the table.
Right, right.
I always thought of it that way. On your left, salads. On your right, pizza.
We're asking you to chime in about your favorite spots in Kansas City as we talk to Timothy Speed Levitch. He's a historical tour guide with a new show on Hulu called Up to Speed, in which he gives historical tours. It's definitely a wild ride. Think of it as a guy who gives you directions after taking several shots of whiskey. Doc in KC, welcome to Central Standard.
Hey, thanks. Boy, the Crew is one of my favorite movies. I do a great job of diverting myself from the anti-Cruise. But I want to ask Speed, Kansas City documentaries, if you've seen stuff like DOS Bus, Cowtown Ballroom, Black Hand Straw Man, Bazaar, what he thinks of documentaries around town.
That's a very good question from Doc. He wants to ask you about local docs.
Doc, that's an excellent question. I've never seen any of those. I'd like to see all of them. Maybe you can send me a list, because I would love to jump under the hood of that.
How do you document Kansas City? Is there a different approach to documentaries about a city so resonant with American culture in the middle, literally in the middle of the map, literally with its own sort of renegade past and quaint present?
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you document that?
I think it really does start with the enormous now. It starts with having your own present tense, intense extravagance with the place. It is about recognizing the opportunity that a city like this is to understand ourselves to the extent that even the fire hydrants, the cracks in the sidewalks, and the dumpsters are crying out on the topics of our lives.
Speaking of crying out on the topics of your lives, David in downtown wants to know, have you ever seen the John Brown Monument?
The one in Kansas City?
The one in Quintero, the Quintero Ruins.
No.
Well, you have a place to go now.
Yeah, I love it. I put that on my list of things to look forward to.
That is a very fascinating place to go if you look out on the Missouri River, where across the river was Free Kansas, and then here you go.
Right, right.
People had to come by the river, sometimes with a frozen ice, to get to freedom in KCK. And it's a very picturesque view, and they even made a historical site there that overlooks those ruins. So you should definitely go check that out.
Wow, that's excellent.
You talk about being a tour guide as frolicking in the frontiers of human awareness. What does that even mean?
Yeah, the frontiers of human awareness is actually, that's a hip-hop sample from one of my favorite philosophers, Terrence McKenna. And he used to talk about the frontiers of human awareness. Something about that just is, it's lovely to me. It's like meeting yourself on a field of yourself, and you've never been to that field.
In that vein, are you saying that the Earth is a giant classroom?
Yeah, everywhere is school. But I'd like to think of it as a school that's a lot more fun than just the rudimentary high schools that we associate with school.
What's special about having your program online at outlets such as Netflix and Hulu? Do you feel like a pioneer, sort of frontier of human awareness online in the new media space?
It is. It's a dream come true. 10 years ago, I was running around New York working for all sorts of websites, doing similar shticks that I'm doing now. And back then, they had that dream, each one of them, that they would be their own channel. And the technology just wasn't there. The whole thing was like a sinking ship. And 10 years later, here I am doing my same tap dance, but now the technology's here, and I'm doing it for the, I'm living out that dream of doing it for a channel that grew up right out of the computer.
So you've already done San Francisco, Chicago, and Kansas City. What are you doing next?
Tomorrow premieres the next episode on our show page. Again, it's Up to Speed on Hulu, also on Hulu Plus. And tomorrow's episode is called The Many Flavors of Jefferson. And it's an episode about Thomas Jefferson. It takes place at Monticello and University of Virginia in Charlottesville, Virginia. And then a week from tomorrow premieres the New York episode.
All right. You have plenty of expertise there.
That one's called The Beauty of Randomness.
The Beauty of Randomness. Indeed, we've had an exercise in the beauty of randomness on today's program of Central Standard. Our guest is actor, historical tour guide, and current KC resident Timothy Speed Levitch, who has a new show on Hulu, as you just heard, called Up to Speed, in which he gives historical tours. On Twitter, Jen says Speed is a delight and wonder personified. So I think we can close with that.
I really like that description.
Thank you for coming today, Speed.
Great to be here. Thanks.
And tune in tomorrow when we look at two local programs you should know about. One is called Ag Local and another, Bread KC. Our show is produced by Andrea Salenzi, who will soon be leaving the show and heading to Africa, where she will learn how to do the funky Watusi. Up to Date is next with a discussion on what opinions are compared to. That's right, a look at the history of the a-hole. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and this is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.